So I think because of the limited time we have left, we have a little more than 15 minutes left. I think we'll open it up right away to questions from the floor. Yeah. And how
line up over there.
Okay, line up over here on my your right, actually, on your right. Just line up there, and we can then have you be magnified. Or
well, I wonder why anyone would want to succeed in proving the effectiveness of prayer for others, because it seems to me that they would prove two unwanted things if it succeeded. They would prove that God was unfair, unjust, because he would help people on the basis of what somebody else was doing, praying or not praying, versus what that individual merited on his own. And they would also be implying that God wasn't smart enough to figure out who he should help and not help, and he had to seek advice from the people who were praying. Have you heard any explanation of that?
And he responds strictly on the basis of the number of prayers. An Adolf Hitler or an Osama bin Laden type of person in the group being prayed for would be expected to do better in these prayer studies than a Mother Teresa or whatever in the control group or at a hospital where there was no prayer study being conducted.
The other thing is, I think that if there is an all-good, all-powerful, and all-knowing God, you wouldn't need prayer in the first place, because the problems wouldn't exist in the first place, you see. So prayer is just theologically inconsistent from the beginning.
Well, why don't you say your name is?
My name is Amy Walker. I'm from Kansas. I guess my question is addressed to the two doctors that aren't here, so if you guys want to answer it, that'd be fine. Why do they think we need a study of the effectiveness of prayer? As far as I'm concerned, the study's already been done. It may not have been scientifically set up, but the whole of human history before modern medicine was you prayed for your health. It didn't seem to work then. Why do they think that this study is going to change the outcome of that?
Let me just comment. I've written two books now on ancient healthcare. I study ancient healthcare systems. And basically, yes, from about the Paleolithic, you know, the Old Stone Age to maybe the early 20th century, the average lifespan wasn't maybe over 40. And so all through that time, it was, prior to science, it was only religious, for the most part, ways to heal people, and it wasn't until modern science arrived that your lifespan increased. So that's another piece of evidence that it is science who can best deal with health problems and not religion.
I'm very happy that you've recovered from, or substantially recovered from your disease. As a radiologist, I know that Wegener's granulomatosis is a very difficult disease to diagnose, and I'm not surprised it took them a while. It looks like a lot of other things. But the comment on how we doctors are frequently wrong is partly a misperception of what most doctors say. The problem is patients have learned from television and other things to be that we have some great power to predict how long people can survive with certain conditions, and we don't. The best we can do is say that on a statistical basis, most patients, or half the patients, will probably be dead by a certain amount of time. Well, that means the other half are going to be living, and people keep forgetting that that part is in that equation, and they take out from the office, as we all know, any doctor, Dr. Posner knows this, what we say to patients, only 10% they'll remember even a week later, much less 6 months later. So it's very hard, and we apologize to anybody who's still alive who was told that you should be dead.
I'd like to ask you.
That was a dead-on comment, I think.
I'd like to ask you.
Why don't you say your name first?
Hector.
Yes.
How does a faith healer respond, or what tactic does he take if he sees someone coming to him for, quote, healing, and this person has obviously an incorrectible condition, such as scoliosis or total deafness or something like that? There must be histrionic gyrations that a faith healer has to go through to handle this situation.
You quietly nudge him to the back of the group and say, you know, God loves you, something like that, and leave it at that. Because, you'd never see in all my years as a faith healer, people in wheelchairs, they never really got up, you know, and they were brought to the front. And I could see a lot of evangelists put them out to the side, you know. And a lot of people didn't even get to the evangelist when they were in really bad condition, because they knew that it would tell a bad tale eventually.
Some of them set up.
Yeah.
My name is John Gamble. I just want to make a comment on that p-value. To be fair, it's not just the evangelical scientist, if that's a word, probably an oxymoron, but it's very common among so-called scientists to do a clinical study, look at 30 or 40 variables, and then to assess each variable with a 0.05 threshold of significance, which of course, as Dr. Hyman pointed out, is totally, it's illegitimate, because if you test 20 variables, then, you know, and in fact, I did the analysis, if you look at 13 variables, you're going to find a 0.05 difference by random chance alone. And the rough approximation I use when I'm reading an article is, if you've got, say, 5 variables that you're looking at in that article, and you're looking at an 0.05 threshold, you divide by the number of a variable. So in other words, a 0.01 threshold is really the equivalent of a 0.05 threshold when you're looking at 5 variables. Just a rough rule of thumb. And you need to do that not just to evangelical articles, but to so-called scientific articles too.
That last approach you said is technically known as the Bonferroni inequality. They use that. That's one way of doing it. The general term for this that people use is, Percy Diaconis calls it multiple endpoints that people have, and they don't take that into account. The more down-to-earth term that you all might understand better is that the more chances you give a miracle to occur, the more likely it's going to occur. Not because it's a miracle, because something weird is going to happen if you try enough times.
It's called data dredging.
Yeah, data dredging is another way of putting it.
Many years ago, I was a cardiologist, and I've been interested in this subject, so I'd like to make some comments on it. I'm surprised Baird's article is still cited, because a friend gave that to me to read 3 years after I retired, and it was so obviously fallacious that I think that people ought to give up on it. Besides the faults that you showed in it, repeated complications, I think if you look at it critically, his two groups are not equally in danger. If his prayed for groups actually the worse, it's a matter of you combining severe angina and coronary insufficiency, which are essentially the same thing, and then it becomes weighted against the non-prayed for group. I haven't seen the paper for a while, but I'm going to look at it with you. In addition, on faith healing, somebody named Galton in the 1800s did a very simple study. He pointed out that in all Anglican churches, the monarch of England is prayed for health and long life. And he made a study of the health and life of the British monarchs, and he found they were not any healthier or longer lived than the average Englishman, which is a very simple and a very convincing study. Another place that has to be mentioned in faith healing is Lourdes. People still go to Lourdes and claim to be healed there. Now, this was many years ago when I studied the figures. 90% of the healing at Lourdes is due to either paralysis, which is very often a hysterical thing, blindness, and when I was still in the medical business, my ophthalmological friend said they could not really tell whether somebody was objectively blind or not. And the third thing was TB. Now, there's a lot of emotion involved in when you go to Lourdes and you go in the procession. There's a release of cortical hormones, which have been shown temporarily to get rid of TB in your lungs. It does come back, but for a few months you're going to be healed. So I think that's the fallacy of words. The definitive paper on this subject came out in Lancet, a very respectable British journal, about 2 or 3 years ago, and the final conclusion after reviewing the extensive literature on this subject was that there is no convincing evidence that prayer does work. Having said that, I will also say you have to keep an open mind to an individual who believes in prayer and believes in God and prays. There may be some evidence that this causes some hormonal changes in him that makes him perhaps more likely to survive certain illnesses. Thank you.
This is I'm Eileen Rowan. This is to any of you. I'm struggling with what positive recommendations we might be making. On the one hand, for instance, we might be encouraging some degree of controlled studies in response to try to replicate. And I understand what you're saying about the lack of potential for control, but there are certain things, or the general sense, for instance, that there may be some sort of a dose-response relationship with prayer. And certainly we can heap on 100 extra prayers, and I think in a large enough group, perhaps you could assume that the amount of random prayer occurring is roughly the same for the two groups of their life. So there's certain things we might be able to do. And in the New York Times earlier this year, there was a study reported that has been published in a reputable journal, I can't recall which one, where a team of doctors has come up with an index of degree of faith that they correlated with recovery from some illness. And they actually found a negative response, they believe. So many people felt, oh my God, you know, my faith is bad and God is punishing me, or there's a devil in me, or my friends don't love me and they're not praying for me enough. And the fear and the anguish and the doubt was so tremendous that it actually hurt their recovery. So they actually reported on a negative effect. So perhaps we shouldn't shy away from calling for true reproduction of some of these to see if we can replicate it. On the other hand, do we want to direct research funds toward this, which could be better spent elsewhere? So I'm wondering what you think should be, or should we be calling for something? I'm uneasy with the role of just sitting back throwing stones.
I share your concern about money being spent for more useful research. Cancer research would, you know, be of much more use, I think, much more potential value than prayer research. But far be it from me to do anything to try to stifle prayer research if people want to go out and research the possible value of distant prayer. I mean, as I claimed in my paper, one thing in there that was actually true is that I indeed am not closed-minded. My mind is open. If God wants, I regret to report that the experiment that I conducted during my talk failed. But should something happen that only, as I said, a closed-minded zealot could deny, I certainly have no vested interest in believing that there is no God, especially if the Christian God is the real God, and I'm going to be thrown in hell for not believing. I have every reason in the world to be converted into a belief in that God. So, if anyone wants to conduct research and prove to me that the Christian God is real, if he is real, I want to know before it's too late.
Just one more comment to that. It is something we all should have some degree of a vested interest, because this is actually becoming a huge proliferating area of research, all funded by religious foundations. There's several that are funding this type of work. Who's funding the more objective other side? I'm afraid nobody right now, unless perhaps we call for that. And as this body grows, there's increasing pressure on insurance companies to fund this sort of thing, which we all do end up paying for. And it becomes, it's being reported in the media as fact for proof of religion, which affects us in ways that we saw September 11th. So I think it is a serious issue, and we should look for ways. We should be trying to direct the medical establishment and come up with some consensus on how we should be shaping their response to this.
Yeah, I would say we can't afford not to try to do something like that. especially with churches, church studies, and I think we can do it and show that the opposite could be just as true. We could find that those people that are prayed for a lot are the sickest. And so I'm all for it, for trying at least. I think in the end it might save more money from all this nonsense that's being spent on this kind of alternative therapy. And I should say, even if you prayed to the Judeo-Christian God and you found, let's say, 100% of the people were healed, it wouldn't prove it was a Judeo-Christian God. Why? Because there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, says, no matter which God you pray to, it's Krishna who answers. So.
I have a question for Dr. Avalos. When you started out, did you actually feel that you were healing these people, and did you reach some point where you realized that you're not healing them, but maybe you're converting them?
Yes, I believe that I was. You never say you heal them, and God healed them through you. But yes, I believe that whoever I was praying for and whoever reported they were healed, I believed it. And it wasn't until later that I started to realize, you know, it just there's no way to know that this actually works, and maybe I'm doing more harm than good.
Well, one thing I think you could offer all of us is the insight, being raised as a fundamentalist and believing so strongly from childhood, and suddenly you change. What happened? Is there any lesson here?
Well, I should say it's not suddenly. It was through years of study, and I wrote about this in an article called How Bible Study Made an Unbeliever Out of Me in Free Thought Today. And there's also was a little bit more in my article on Can Science Prove Prayer Works in the Free Inquiry Summer 97 issue, which is also on the web if you look at under Free Inquiry.
Well, I have one question for Dr. Posner. We only read about the positive studies where they have positive results. Do you have any feeling for how many studies are conducted where they get negative results or no results and then they just toss them out?
Yeah, I don't know how many studies have been conducted with negative results. I know that Dr. Dale Matthews published a study. I think it was published last year. He's one of the physicians in the forefront of prayer research, and it involved a group of patients in Clearwater, Florida. I live in Tampa. Rheumatoid arthritis patients. It turned out that the prayer did not help, and his study was published last year. I forget where. I've never, as I said, I haven't conducted my own research. I haven't done my own studies. I don't know what research. It's difficult enough to get a study published if your results are positive. Dr. Bird was his experiment took place in 1983 and was published in 88, and he was rejected in two journals before, even though he proved the existence of the Judeo-Christian God, supposedly, he was rejected in two journals before it was published in the Southern Medical Journal. I don't know how likely it is that you're going to get a study like this published if the results are negative. I would
certainly think. A neutral one would not be on Dateline.
Nope.
Please try and make your question short. We've run over time, so just keep it short if you can.
I'm curious about your experience as a faith healer, your insight, because I saw a documentary about Benny Hinn recently in which they interspersed pictures of Benny Hinn in his opulent office with pictures of an Indian couple who attended his in their tiny apartment with their handicapped son. And what he did struck me as truly evil. And my question to you is, do you think most of these, you know, these very successful big money making faith healers are sincere?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I think that they may be self-deluded, but I think that the greed also gets to them. I would say most faith healers are not the rich people that you see like Benny Hinn. There are thousands working in small churches, and they don't gain anything from it necessarily. You know, they're just sincere believers. But I would say somebody like Benny Hinn probably has greed gotten the best of him at certain points, I suppose. But I would say most of people were like me. They were sincere believers who just don't know any better sometimes. They just don't have the information or the critical thinking to make them escape from that kind of worldview.
James Randi wrote a book, The Faith Healers, some years ago, and he didn't report upon, I think, the small town faith healers that no one knows. Of course, he didn't write a chapter about them in his book, but the ones he did write about used tricks, gimmicks that were clearly intentional. It's hard to ascribe innocence to those faith healers based upon their tactics.
Yeah, there's a very common one where you put somebody up in front and you make their legs uneven just by moving their hips. And even then, I would say, when I saw that done for the first time, the person really did think he was doing a miracle there, even though it's obviously, just a twist and turn of the legs. But the person thought this was really God. You know?
A lot of them, when people walk in with a severe limp or when using a cane or crutches, they put them in a wheelchair and wheel them to the front row to tell them that, we'll make you comfortable and give you a great seat. And those tend to be the people who the faith healers, at least the ones that of the stature that Randi wrote about, those are the ones who then, on the TV show, get up out of their wheelchair. Of course, they didn't arrive in a wheelchair, but the TV viewers don't know that.
Dr. Avalos, I was fascinated with your statistics on airplane crashes, but I wondered if it's possible you might not have misinterpreted the data, because you concluded that it was due to altitude.
Now, it's one of the factors, yes.
Okay, I was wondering and stick with me for just a second, if it's possible, I was thinking about this, if you're off takeoff or landing, you got very little time to pray. Mm-hmm. That's a short prayer. If you're at a high altitude, you've got a lot of time to pray. Now, we learned earlier that 96% of people, at least probably more if there's no atheists in foxholes, are going to be praying. So maybe it's only short prayers that are effective. And so I'm wondering if the correct conclusion isn't that God has attention deficit disorder.
I never thought of it that way.
Dr. Gary Posner, as you began, you asked for prayer for height. Could you please stand?
I already recorded that it failed.
Okay. My question is very quick. I heard that 30% is the placebo effect, effectiveness of placebo. If you believe in a placebo effect, 30% of the people are better or feel better or report that they feel better. And my question is this correct? And if it is, should we prefer an 11% God or a 30% placebo effect?
I don't know that 30% figure is that you can generalize, but certainly whenever new drugs are, anyone can go to the library and pick up the physician's desk reference and look up look up any drug at random, and toward the end of the description, they will tell you that adverse effects were found in X percent of patients, diarrhea in X percent, and nausea in X percent. But nausea was also found in 5% of placebo patients, and diarrhea, in 8% of placebo patients. I don't 30 strikes me as being an inflated figure, but it's not far off from that 11% figure.
So before we get into the fight over the placebo effect, and it's a very controversial topic now. That's another issue. This session is over, but I'm sure that both Gary Posner and Hector Avalos, Professor Avalos, will be happy to talk with you more. And if you need some praying, I'm sure despite his change of heart, he still might be happy to help to accommodate you.